everyone. This is Tim and John's afternoon session on Future Radio. With me, I'm John Osborne, and that man is...
I'm Tim Clare, and I'm here, and I'm naked. One of the statements that me and John have just made were false.
Yeah, it was this naked one, wasn't it?
It was the naked one. I'm glad you didn't go for saying the one that was less likely, like it's the Tim and John show. That would have been less funny. But the reason I said that wasn't just to bamboozle and defraud the readers, the listeners. How does the medium of radio work again, John? They're listeners, isn't it?
Ears. It's the ears.
these old little glasses flaps, I call them. Me and you wear spectacles. Because we got a little bit of a theme for today's show. It's going to be... lies, or am I being serious? No, I am being completely honest. It's lies, isn't it, John?
Yeah, the theme of today's show is lying. I've prepared some lies that I'm going to talk to you about. So we kind of want people to get in touch maybe with their lies that they remember telling that they maybe got away with.
Or... it's blatantly going to be childhood lies, isn't it? Yeah. It's blatantly everyone's best lie was told when they were a child.
Not necessarily. Well, it might be with the fuzz.
Which is criminal slang for police, I believe. Yeah, no, of course, yeah, some people might... All right, so it's possible that our listeners are going to come out with some incredible adult lies, but they tend to be more serious, like the coolest... My hypothesis is... In fact, I'm going to stick with what I said originally. Everyone's best lie happens when they're a child, because it's when your sense of what is realistic is actually completely messed up. So you make ridiculous lies. I told a group of friends when I was in primary school that I regularly went to Beano Land and I was mates with Dennis the Menace. Now, clearly, no one... like, that's just mental illness if you say that as an adult. But as a child, right, that was... And I got away with it. They believed me because the kind of, like, walls of what's realistic... You know, the Beano essentially was this journal of factual events.
Yeah.
And I said... And I got away with it. And I'm still pretty proud of that.
And are you still mates with Dennis the Menace?
He turned out really badly when he grew up, actually. It turned out that all that bullying and then using his catty, which is short for catapult, he turned into a bit of a... If only there'd been Asbos back then in the 1980s. John.
Don't be a victim of John Osborne's lies.
The new feature, John Osborne's Lies, in which John Osborne says one true thing and two lies. And you, the listener, but mainly me, has to guess whether John Osborne is lying or telling the truth. Because he's a very honest-sounding person, but he's capable of lying when he's pressed.
Two of these statements are true. One of them is a lie.
So I have to find the lie. It's like a cup and shell game.
Yeah.
No, that would just be the same thing, wouldn't it? Shell and pea game.
Okay, so number one, one of the reasons that I'm really bad at lying, like I'm a terrible liar, as well as not being able to tell when other people are lying, I also can't lie because I giggle really badly, especially when I was growing up.
I feel like you might be trying to sell me a dummy here by going, the thing is, whichever one is the lie, I'm going to giggle through. I'll just say at home, like you really want to be, I know you can't see John's facial expressions, etc., but do listen, maybe you're going to, without the innocent face, you will actually be able to better tell the lie from the two truths in which it is ensconced.
Okay, so my first one is that I once told a hairdresser that... So I get very nervous before I have a haircut and I don't know what to talk about. And I was unemployed at the time. I didn't want to tell him that I was unemployed because that's not very... And I wanted a very cool haircut as well. I always have really bad haircuts. And when he asked me what I did for a living, I told him I was a writer for Hollyoaks. That's the first statement that I once told a hairdresser that I was a writer for Hollyoaks.
I hope that's true.
The second statement
Can I just check, was that in Norwich or was that in the north?
That was in Norwich.
Okay.
Number two is I was recently in London and I was in a shop and I bought... coffee and a sandwich, and I realised when I had to pay that I didn't have enough money. I'd left my wallet in my coat, which was the flat that I was staying at, and so I was like, oh, I can't afford this. But also buying a coffee and a sandwich at the same time was the comedian Sean Locke, who said, I'm paying with a 20, I'll get that. That's the second statement is Sean Locke bought me a sandwich.
How long ago was that?
That was
roughly
two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
And number three is that I once was in Grimsby and I met the comedian Craig Charles, And I had Lister from Red Dwarf, and I had a mouth organ in my pocket, which I'd been given that day as a present. And I asked him if he wanted to play my mouth organ. And this was in a pub, and he started to play it, and people crowded round and listened to Craig Charles play my mouth organ. So you've got a choice. One of those is a lie. Hollyoaks, Sean Locke, Craig Charles mouth organ.
Right, OK, I've got an idea, but I think for the listeners at home, should we play a song to give them a chance to stew over it?
Don't Sit Down, because I Moved Your Chair, the Arctic Monkeys. That's one... I was going to say it's from their most recent album, but it's from the most recent Arctic Monkeys that I album that I bought. Alex Turner's a dude.
Yeah, Alex Turner is a dude.
What do you think was the lie?
I think John Osborne...
I'm really looking forward to this, by the way. this feature, and specifically this revelation now.
Can we play the theme tune again, since we have to get a little bit of... OK, this is a theme tune of John Osborne's Lies. I made it this morning.
Seems he's a good boy, does what he should, boy. Seems he's so very nice. But if you think that you're just a dingbat, in for a big surprise. Don't be a thickhead, there's something wicked behind the friendly eyes. Don't be a victim of John Osborne's lies.
John Osborne's lies. So which one of those facts was in fact one of John Osborne's notorious lies? I think the Craig Charles anecdote, I think the Craig Charles anecdote is based on... I reckon you probably met John Hegley or something and got him to play your mouth organ. I've never known Craig Charles to be... Oh, I'm such a regret my decision now. I've never known Craig Charles to be known for playing the mouth organ. The idea that you would walk across a pub, hand him... I can believe that you'd have a mouth organ on you, but, like, pull it out and present him with it. I just don't think that would happen.
True. It's true. It happened. It's weird. It's when I was seven. It's when I was at sixth form. I was very shy as a sixth form. It sounds absurd that I did it, but I was with my friend Gommy, who's your friend as well, and a couple of other people. And I don't know why. I just did it. I had it in my pocket, and I just said to him, "It'd be really funny if you played my mouth organ." I got it today, and then I can get every time I meet a famous person, I'm going to ask them if they'll play my mouth
and
organ.
It'll be like, and then at some stage it'll be like, you've got off with Duncan Goodhue.
Yeah, it will be. I was already planning my first Edinburgh show even then. I did that. And it was after seeing him at...
I got off with Duncan Goodhue would be a brilliant name for an Edinburgh show.
It was after going to watch Craig Charles' gig at Grimsby Leisure Centre, and he was in the bar afterwards. And we went up to him and he played it, and the whole of the pub... Maybe I'm exaggerating, but the whole of the pub gathered round and listened to him. He was brilliant at the mouth organ as well.
Did you know that before you approached him?
No, I didn't at all. No, I had no idea. Which one is a lie? 50-50 now.
Well, surely it's the Sean Locke one, then.
Sean Locke one, yeah. I've never seen Sean Locke. Sean Locke has never bought me a sandwich.
We've had some messages in about the worst lies people have been told or have told themselves. The kind of worst best. You know, Ray Morgan says she was told that the ice cream van is just a musical van that drives around the streets for entertainment. Hashtag worst lie, hashtag scarred for life.
Oh, that made me feel really sad. I want to buy her an ice cream. I owe Ray an ice cream. Remind me.
I'll tweet her and say that you've promised. Someone who goes by the Twitter name of Reverian says, my mum said she was 21 for the first 8 years of my life. Truth came out when I told friend's mum that she was 13 when she had me. realising that couldn't be true, John, not... And Chris Thorpe says, of course, any of these might be fibs themselves, but if this isn't a fib, this is amazing. I once convinced someone that Frank Sidebottom's head was real and that he suffered from a rare genetic disorder.
That's excellent. That's really good.
Surely no one could believe those were actual eyes.
If You Don't Want Me to Destroy You by Super Furry Animals, and before that was Jose Gonzalez, which is one of those names that is quite a fun thing to say. Jose Gonzalez with Killing for Love. So, hello everyone, this is the Tim and John afternoon session. This was something that I saw online this week from Darren Brown. Like, Darren Brown, again, is a dude. I like Darren Brown a lot.
I think he's one of the funniest Twitterers ever, but, like, whenever I try to explain his tweets to someone else, they go, oh, that's not very funny, and I'm like... And then I realise that often it's just, like, very juvenile. Like, he did a tweet saying, I need some help. I'm in an English country garden and I really need the toilet. What should I do? and I was killing myself laughing, and I was trying to retweet it to other people, and they're like, that's not funny. I was like, don't you know the song? What do you do if you're desperate for the loo in an English country? Yeah, I know the song. It's just not very... Oh, I think he's hilarious.
He's got a brilliant mischievousness to him, which I find really... Like, for someone who does things that are so serious as well and so big and grand, just like a cheeky smile can get you a long way as well.
I think the contrast between the two works wonders.
Yeah, and I saw online a letter that he wrote to a fan, which has now been reproduced. It was on his blog. To Devin Brown, my name is Stephen, and I come from Liverpool, England. I am 10 years old. I saw your show.
If he's from Liverpool, shouldn't you like do his accent? I'm Stephen. No, I can't do it. I always sound like a Welshman with a stroke whenever I try to do any accent.
I researched this guy, Stephen, and he comes from a very similar part of the world to me, which is lucky.
I just happened to be sending it from Liverpool was his like mailing address. Great. Yeah.
Dear Denver, my name is Stephen. I come from Liverpool. I'm 10 years old. I saw your show in the Empire. It was the best thing I have ever seen in my life. When I am older, I want to be a magician, but I am interested in hypnosis and mind manipulating. Have you got any advice you could give to me, please? Thanks. Magically yours, Stephen.
I like the magically yours is my favourite. The era of... adverbially yours letters has really passed, but that was one of my favourite. It used to be used quite a lot on Jim will fix it.
It did, didn't it? Yeah.
Caringly yours, if they wanted a car based one. John, you look panicked. Shall I fill?
Is there a really strange noise going on?
Yeah, there's a plane going on.
Is that what it is? None of the buttons in front of me will be able to control that plane.
That plane. No,
none of these are in charge of aircraft.
That's the most kind of like Luddite caveman response ever. You're like, what?
What's going on?
John just started crying because a plane went over. Jumping up and down with his blowpipe, like, trying to stop it go past. John, we've had them for years.
I was trying to turn down the faders. How can I get rid of this plane? Where's the bazookas?
Well,
how do I launch the missiles? None of these buttons launch missiles. I can fade our microphones down. I can put the CD on. Missiles, no. So Devin replied by saying, hello, Stephen. Thanks ever so much for writing, and thanks for coming to the show. I'm guessing that you sneaked in as no under 12s was supposed to be there. In fact, I saw you. I'm sure, because I remember thinking, I must report that tiny boy to the police after the show. I'm pleased you liked it so much. I love performing this show. They're beautiful. Beautiful theatres, and it's very cool coming out on stage and seeing you all sat there. As for hypnotising, it's very difficult to hypnotise someone if you're quite a bit younger than them, as they don't take it very seriously. You could try A, just hypnotising very young children or kittens, or B, drawing a fake beard on with permanent marker first. That might make you look older. It worked for me in the first couple of TV shows. Or C, do what I did. Learn magic first and get really good at it, and then see if it leads you into the mind-reading sort of thing that I do. It took me 10 years to really learn it properly, and I'm 93 now. You spell better than any other person on this forum. This is on a magic forum. So you're obviously bright enough to be very good at magic, and bright enough to know that you can do much more clever magic that you make up yourself instead of just what everyone else does, which is normally silly. I also imagine you're very creative and good at painting or writing or fixing stuff or making people laugh. All sorts of skills you find you can bring to the magic you do. If you send an email to my assistant, his name is Coops, and tell him your address, I'll find and send you a magic book suitable for an intelligent and creative 10-year-old to get you started. I'll even sign it from me and David Blaine. That's how I got started. I got a book and tried all the stuff in it and built from there. Best of luck with it. I'll tell Coops to expect a name email from you and I'll alert the police. Yours, Darren. I really like that kind of thing. He's such a kind of... makes his... like, that could inspire him to be a magician. Like that.
Do you think we should try and write to some people that we admire, but, like... exaggerate our age in the favour of saying that we're younger, maybe. And see if we can get some cool advice. Because that would be, if I'd written to him now and I wanted to be a magician at 31, that would all have been relevant, apart from the kind of, you know, apart from this joke at the beginning and the end that he bookended, which I still found funny. So maybe if I can think of some people who are sort of my heroes, like Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Super Mario, if I write to him and say that I'm 7...
Yeah.
Do you think he'll let me design the new Mario game?
Yeah, I think we should do a challenge. We should each find 3 people to write to. Write them letters
and
or
lying
emails.
About our age.
And lie about our age. Yeah, we could do. Or whatever means necessary.
Dear Damon Albarn, I am dying.
That's those darlings. Screws get loose. I really love that.
I was sure that was called Snooze They Lose.
No, Screws Get... It's great, isn't it? It's kind of described by the Rolling Stones as 1966 meets 1977. Kind of a blend of the Supremes and the Ramones. I think it's really great.
I thought it was good fun.
We've been talking about lying this afternoon, and Stephen E. Rayner has messaged in to say that when he was about 11, he read a biography of Elvis Presley, which featured a story about him being a surviving twin, his brother Jesse having died in the womb. Elvis thought he'd absorbed Jesse's personality and used this to explain his own conflicted nature. I promptly adopted this story as my own. I told it to every new friend for years.
Oh, amazing. But you chose a good one, because people choose really rubbish things. Like, I claimed I had a tattoo. I claimed that it was on my tricep, which... Like, the problem with that lie is someone could go, well, show it me then. and then you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I was 10 at the time. Oh, a kid I went to school with claimed that his dad was a ninja.
Brilliant. Ninjas are always the best. Like, I'm gullible, but I would, as soon as someone brings ninjas into the equation, I'm sceptical.
Wrong cultural background, isn't it? If he'd said he was a knight...
Yeah.
At least you go, well, they are English, so...
Or a milkman.
The magical, astrological sounds of Pete and the Pirates with Come to the Bar. I really enjoyed that.
I like songs that you've never heard them before, but by the end of the song, you're singing along with the chorus. That's quite cool.
That would make me come to the bar. If a bar played that to me, I would come to it. Anyway, John, new feature.
Excellent. It's called All the American Presidents.
And do you have a theme tune?
No, I don't.
Do you want a theme
yes,
tune?
Yes, I do.
Maybe I could cook one up. It's called All the American Presidents.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the origins of it are... I know so much about Neighbours, Coronation Street, the mid-90s and football. That's all that I know about. And I don't really know about any important things.
Opera of Western politics, perhaps.
And so I thought, well, it'd be really good to just gradually teach myself things, ground. And so I thought I would do that. Teaching myself about all the American presidents. And then I realised that I did a radio show every week on Future Radio. And I thought, feature alert. And a little alarm went off in my head.
A little hashtag.
And so I thought I would teach myself about a different president every week. And so last week was Theodore Roosevelt.
I knew you'd go for Roosevelt straight away. You know, I've just started reading. I've just started reading Wind in the Willows. And it starts off with a letter from Theodore Roosevelt to the writer of Wind in the Willows, and basically saying to him, I was really cross with you that you changed your previous series of characters to talk about these animals, but by the time I got to the end of the book, I think it's better than anything else you read, and I read it to my children and they love it. Oh. Well done. And so he's just stuck that in the opening of the book as a little...
That's lovely.
Not into the plot.
That's like Devon Brown's letter to the 10-year-old.
It was. I didn't know you were going to say that. But yeah, Roosevelt, who popularised in the West the African saying, speak softly.
And carry a big stick. It's great.
Bang on.
And so that's something that I know now because I've educated myself.
You're excellent. Yeah, so you're already able to riff on Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing, isn't it?
Whose head appears on Mount Rushmore as well, doesn't
yeah,
it? One of the four biggies.
Yeah, and so this...
Who's this week?
So this is about Franklin Roosevelt this week. I've got five exciting facts about Franklin
Roosevelt. You've chunked it into five facts. Well, brilliant. Hashtag golden radio.
Last week it was just a bit waffly, so this is hopefully a little bit more concise. And then at the end I've got some fun facts about him. Actually, let's start off with the fun facts about him. Franklin Roosevelt. His favourite authors were Rudyard Kipling, Charles Dickens and Mark Twain. His favourite Bible passage was St. Paul's Epistle to the Corinthians, 13th chapter. His favourite cake, fruitcake. Favourite colour, do I guess what his favourite colour was?
I'd guess red, but that's just because it's mine.
Blue. Among his favourite dishes were scrambled eggs, grilled cheese sandwiches and hot dogs. Favourite flowers were wild blossoms. Favourite fruit, orange. Favourite horse, Bobby. Favourite poem... Rudyard Kipling's If. That sounds like he's not really read that many poems.
I think he's going for
popular. He's just Googled poems there, hasn't he? Favourite sandwiches, toasted cheese.
That's not a bad choice of favourite sandwich. Yeah. I think anyone who says just toasted cheese without like saying like a kind of like ham and cheese toasty or something, I think is a bit boring and I wouldn't trust them.
Favourite sports, swimming, sailing and fishing.
So he's just trying to make himself out to be like kind of like a rugged outdoorsman, basically.
Or maybe he is a rugged outdoorsman.
God, John's got a bit defensive already. Go on then, let's hear a little bit about him.
Favourite tree, first of all.
I think his favourite tree is the elm.
Tulip poplar.
That's not a real tree. That's a flower.
First fact about Roosevelt. Well, he was the 32nd president of the United States, 1933 to 1945, and the central figure in world events during the mid-20th century, leading the US during the time of worldwide economic crisis and World War, the only president elected to more than two terms.
Did he do the New Deal?
Yes, he did.
Cool.
If you want to press track one... track one on
okay,
CD
so
two.
Okay, so press it's going.
So this should be the bouncy popular song "Happy Days Are Here Again" was his campaign theme. Yes. So this is "Happy Days Are Here Again," which is his campaign theme. FDR
bouncing campaign theme. I'd
yeah,
say.
It is. Yeah, he defeated Republican Herbert Hoover in November 1932 at the depth of the Great Depression. FDR's persistent optimism and activism contributed to a renewal of the national spirit, reflecting his victory over paralytic illness to become the longest-serving president in U.S. history. He worked closely with Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin in leading the Allies against Germany and Japan in World War II, but died just as victory was in sight. He's rated by scholars as one of the top three US presidents, a liberal Democrat. Roosevelt defined his ideological position as a little left of centre.
We should have "Happy Days Are Here Again" as our bed for our opening
show.
We should
do it. Lovely,
isn't it?
It's
a lovely song.
Number two, Roosevelt's mother, Sarah, was possessive as soon as he was born. Sarah was the dominant influence in Franklin's early years. Franklin died 4 days after his mother. And as a little boy, his big passion was stamp collecting, which was his passion. It was his lifelong hobby. His interest began...
So he's not a rugged outdoorsman.
He did it on horseback. His interest in it began when he was 8 years old and his mother passed her collection on to him. He enjoyed collecting stamps, he said, because of their link with geography and history, not for their intrinsic value. While recovering from polio, he spent many bedridden hours arranging and annotating thousands of specimens. As president, there was scarcely a day...
Stamps aren't specimens.
As president, there was scarcely a day when he did not spend some time with his collection. At his death, his personal stamp collection numbered over 1,200,000 stamps.
He probably got a lot of letters.
Yeah, 80% of which was of little value. Scrap, as the president called it. The collection was sold at public auction in accordance with his wishes and realised $228,000. Number three, Roosevelt reportedly had affairs outside his marriage, including one with Eleanor, his wife's social secretary, Lucy Mercer, which began soon after she was hired in early 1914. In September 1918, his wife Eleanor found letters revealing the affair in Roosevelt's luggage when he had returned from World War I.
The affair happened in his luggage?
It did, yeah. Exciting to have an affair in someone's luggage.
Oh, that sounds really quite sweet.
It does, doesn't it? Going round and round the carousel.
The fair in Roosevelt. Roosevelt's luggage. That's going to be the title of my next collection. It's not.
According to the Roosevelt family, Eleanor offered Franklin a divorce so that he could be with the woman he loved. But Lucy, being Catholic, could not bring herself to marry a divorced man with five children. Roosevelt's mother, Sarah, also intervened and told Franklin...
He should have killed her, because then you're allowed to remarry if the person died.
Yeah, that's true. So he should have done a murder. And so he...
Respect as a president, you have someone to do that for you, though, don't you?
So Franklin broke his promise. He and Lucy started seeing each other again in 1941, and Lucy was given the codename Mrs. Johnson by the Secret Service. Lucy was with FDR the day he died.
Suspicious.
Yeah. Number four... in August 1921, when vacationing in Canada, Roosevelt contracted an illness diagnosed then as polio, which resulted in permanent paralysis from the waist down. And for the rest of his life, Roosevelt refused to accept that he was permanently paralysed.
That sounds embarrassing.
Yeah. But after he became president, he helped to found the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. At the time, Roosevelt was able to convince many people that he was getting better, which he believed was essential if he wanted to run for public office. Fitting his hips and legs with iron braces, he laboriously taught himself to walk a short distance by swiveling his torso while supporting himself with a cane. In private, he used a wheelchair, but was very careful never to be seen with it in public. Okay, and number five, the last fact about Roosevelt. He was inaugurated March the 4th, 1933, 32 days after Hitler was appointed Chancellor of Germany, and the US was at the nadir of its worst depression of history. A quarter of the workforce was unemployed, industrial production had fallen by more than a half since 1929, 2 million were homeless. Roosevelt began blaming the economic crisis on bankers and financiers, the quest for profit, and the self-interest basis of capitalism.
Like today, John.
It's exactly like today, yeah. And when he was inaugurated...
Except it tended to be a lot more anti-Semitic then.
which is a bad thing.
Yes.
It was the middle of a bank panic, hence the backdrop for his famous words, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." So that is my latest President of the United States.
John Osborne learns the presidents. It's not... What's it called? What's the feature called?
I think it's called All of the American Presidents.
All of the American Presidents. That was really good fun, John, and I really liked it. And this is Everything Everything. Turns out, like I've just been looking up a Tom Hanks and the Big Rap, that forget Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks's son, who goes by the MC name of Chet Hayes.
Okay.
He's trying to make his own name as an MC. His little bio on his website says, born and raised on the west side of the west side's main city, LA. He's reaching a bit there. Chet grew up as an enthusiast of the rap game. He is an up-and-coming MC with a flow that does California proud, partnered with lyrical intelligence that complements his attendance at Northwestern University. Living the college life, Chet's days consist of chilling with his boys, attending class, and taking care of business. However, his nights consist of absolutely murdering tracks and living what he is really spitting.
I think he'll do really well as a rapper because everyone loves obnoxious sons of Hollywood movie stars.
Could you want to hear a sample of his lyrics? A call from the brothers in the frat house. I'm with my girl trying to get up under that blouse. She a freshman. She a freak, though. In the bed, but a lady in the street. Yo.
And that's good, is it?
I'm no rapologist, but that seems like the worst thing ever.
The other day on Twitter, Scooby's Pip replied to someone who'd asked if he was married, and he said, "I'm married to the game," in brackets, not the rapper.
Life can be tough, I know time can be slow. There's no need to give up, there's a place you can go. It's a place I know, and it's called the Tim and John Show. Things in your life didn't go how you planned.